This is Eat, Drink, and Be Fairy, written by Olivia Anderson, Isn't My Real Name, LOL, and read by Mistborn Hero, a Batman fanfic featuring the relationship Barbara Gordon and Bruce Wayne, tagged for Point of View Barbara, World Building, Fae and Fairies, Fae Magic, Barbara Needs a Hug, Because I Am Mean to Her, Morally Ambiguous Characters. Listen, man, you can't have a Fae story without it being fucked up. Fire Kid up? Lol. Bruce just really wants to have kids. Part 2 of the All Fae and Games series. Summary. Fae Bruce panics upon realizing his first child won't eat anything he gives him, finds another child picking around his fairy ring, and decides, yeah, I can capitalize on this. Barbara Gordon had always been interested in the Fae. She knew that it was wrong, that there must have been a reason why everyone around her would blanch whenever she dared to ask about them, but she couldn't help it. She couldn't even understand why she shouldn't have been interested in them. They were more interesting than humans, that was for sure. They had magic. They could do theoretically anything. They couldn't tell a lie. She wanted to know everything there was to know about them. Put simply, she was curious, as kids are wont to be. But her interest wasn't truly piqued until the day one of the kids in her village disappeared. Dick Grayson, someone she had never really talked to, but knew of, as you could find that everyone knew of everyone in a place as small as theirs. Taken, the townsfolk had whispered, hugging their children close. Traded, she had thought, watching the Graysons go about their days, seemingly unaware of what they had lost, and even less aware of what they had been given. And if it were only that, perhaps she would have gone about her day as well. She would grow up to take on her father's job, making sure their village was safe, or perhaps become a librarian or a scribe, or anything even remotely normal for that matter. But fate didn't have that in store for her. So, one day, while she had been taking her dad's lunch to the prison he was guarding, which, really, was just a repurposed house that their only criminal, Suko, wasn't allowed to leave, she had come across an old man. Now, seeing old men wasn't particularly strange. It happened to pretty much everyone. However, she didn't recognize the man, and that had never happened before. Beyond that, he looked normal. Too normal. Perfectly normal. So much so that despite the strangeness that was her not knowing him, her eyes seemed to almost glaze over him, even when they walked step in step. And yet, he didn't look all that normal at all. There was something wrong with the man in a way that she couldn't describe. And as she scrutinized him, she realized why. His face was wrinkled, but that was the only flaw that could be seen. There were no age spots, no scars, no hints of the life he should have had before this. Even the wrinkles felt strange, somehow too deep, cutting through his skin in a way that seemed almost precise. She realized, with unwavering certainty, that the man beside her was merely a facsimile of a human. So, despite her years of being told that this could only ever be to her detriment, she found herself asking, "Are you a traveler, mister? Aren't we both traveling at the moment?" he asked, turning a relaxed smile to her. It was disarming. It made her want to relax and look away. Perhaps, she forced herself to say instead, made herself note the evasive way he answered, "I just don't recognize you." He nodded easily. "I'm from out of town." "What brings you here?" "Come to pay someone a little visit," he said simply, and she knew she shouldn't ask, should find a way to leave that the being could not fault her for being impolite. But she had never been too great with self-preservation anyways. Why else would she not scream for help the moment she realized something was wrong? "Is it Zuko?" she asked, her voice dropping to a whisper. The Fae, because she was sure he was a Fae at this point, for anything else would simply lie, considered this for a moment before nodding. "I have unfinished business with him." "I see." Perhaps that was part of the trade Dick had made. Or maybe Zuko had made a deal at some point. He certainly seemed stupid enough. Really? Who commits murder? Stupid. Her question answered, they walked the rest of the way in strangely companionable silence. Granted, their companionness could be attributed to the shortness of said walk. They only had one more turn to go, and Babs was quick to rush over and hug her dad the moment she spotted him. But still, her smile pulled wider than usual as she handed over a basket of food, bouncing up and down on the balls of her feet with an energy thrumming under her skin, elated at having talked to the kind of being she had always wanted to get to know. But then, her father's grip on her slackened somewhat. She drew back. Her father's eyes were strange, coasting over the recently arrived Fae, without really seeming to concentrate on his face. She turned to glare at the Fae, and the man gave a smile that was almost sheepish, but the glaze didn't fade from her father's face. After all, the Fae never seemed to fully take its eyes off of the iron sword hanging at her father's hip. "May I go inside and speak to Mr. Zuko? It is a family thing." The Fae asked her father, his hands folded neatly behind himself. "Are you other?" her dad asked, more out of habit than anything. Back when the only crime in the city was otherworldly creatures trying to sneak in, and the occasional thief, her father had worked at the border, making sure they were secured. Maybe he should have kept doing that. Maybe he would still have his daughter if he had. But that was the future. Now, the being laughed lightly and gave its answer. "I don't believe so. No." Her father laughed along, assuming it to be a joke rather than an absolute truth. And so, the Fae was allowed inside. When he came out, not that long after, he was holding a potted plant. She frowned down at it, only just remembering to finish chewing her loaf of bread before asking, "What's that, mister?" The old man smiled. "It is a pumpkin. Did you know that the word for pumpkin in Italian is zucca?" Her father jerked, his eyes clearing, and something akin to horror dawned in his face. He rushed past the being, into the house, yelling for Zuko. leaving Babs alone with the Fae. She should have been scared. That could have been her. But the Fae gave her a tiny pat on the top of her head, in a kind of goodbye, and she couldn't help the smile that came over her face. It didn't take long for Babs to sneak into the woods, curiosity curling itself around her neck like a leash, dragging her along the path. She was helpless to stop it, not that she really wanted to. Tiny feet picked their way along the trail. It wound itself in this way and that, aimless and seemingly trying to keep her away. But Babs was nothing if not stubborn. She had snuck out of the house in the dead of night. A sandwich that she had stolen from her father's lunch earlier that afternoon stowed away in her pocket in case she needed to use it as an offering. She was not going to give up just because the forest had decided that she must trip over every stray root that could possibly exist. And so, eventually, she stumbled upon a clearing. Stumbled in a literal sense, in that she tripped over one final root and landed face first in the grass. A tiny huff left her as she pushed herself up, and only then did she realize where she was. It was beautiful. The trees overhead interlocked intricately in a way that allowed no light to come in, but she was still able to see thanks to the small ring in the very center of the clearing. Shiny pebbles were dotted between the flowers and mushrooms, casting a faint glow over the world. She wandered closer the moment she was on her feet, her fingers trailing to touch the tiny flowers cropping up out of the grass. The dirt beneath her feet, plush. And then she reached the edge of the ring. She half expected something to come out of it, for the moonlight to bend and retract and reveal a fae, but nothing came. And she was allowed to examine the rocks more closely. Tiny fingers trailed along the one closest to her, scratching at the surface in an attempt to see just where the shine came from. Who? A voice began, their tone cold, only for them to stop. Feet came to the edge of the circle, and she took in nice leather shoes. Her eyes slowly trailed upwards, taking in elegant clothes and beautiful silver bangles jingling on their wrists and wings until she found a face hovering only a foot away from her own. The Fae was crouched, much in the same way she was, its eyes wide as it looked at her like she was the most interesting thing that could ever exist. As if it didn't exist.
"Hello, little one,"
he said, much softer now.
"What brings you here?"
"Hi, sir," she said, just to be sure she couldn't be called impolite for never responding to his greeting, and then she considered the question. She had only half expected anyone to show up, and if they had, then she had thought it would be the Fae she had met before. "I wanted to meet a Fae." It raised a perfectly manicured brow, tilting its head to the side.
"Oh?
Fairy are cool," she said, feeling a flush begin to creep up her cheeks. She realized she didn't really know what exactly to do from this point onwards. Again, she had not thought this would work, so she settled for the truth. "I wanted to know if you would tell me more about you guys." He seemed to take a minute to consider this, and then he gasped, clapping his hands together.
"I know. How about we make a deal?"
She grimaced, the rules she had been told since birth flickering in her mind's eye, particularly the one in a now bolded text that said, "6. Do not, under any circumstances, make a deal with them. They will always get the upper hand." The one that Dick Grayson should have listened to not that long ago, the one that might have been proven to be the most important by this exact fairy's actions. What kind of deal? She asked, suddenly much worrier. It was one thing to simply tell a magical creature that you think they are interesting. It was another thing entirely to actively break one of the 5 rules. 5 because she didn't count the one about not going into the forest that they had for interacting with said magical creature's kind.
My human is unwilling to eat fae food.
The fae began, looking surprisingly sheepish as it tucked its hand up closer to its chest.
But it isn't easy for me to get him human food, seeing as I do not look particularly normal.
Babs frowned, her eyebrows knitting together. So you want me to bring big food? The fae tilted its head to the side.
It's an easy price to pay for the answers you're looking for, don't you think?
She thought this over. The fae seemed desperate. The attitude change made that obvious. She didn't want to see what would happen if she were to say no. More specifically, she wasn't all that eager to know what it would do to her home if he didn't get his way. And it did benefit her too. She nodded slowly and pulled out the sandwich she had brought, in case it tried to say that she was being rude for showing up unannounced. It was a little smashed from her fall, but it would do, she thought.
It's not much of a meal, she admitted, but it is something.
The fae blinked in surprise. Clearly, it hadn't expected her to have anything on her. And then it smiled, a thin-lipped smile that kept his sharp teeth mostly hidden.
I suppose that could work. What question would you like to use as your payment for today's meal?
Babs thought this over. In exchange for this sandwich, and with no promises of future deals. Its eyebrow twitched. Clearly, they hadn't expected her to escape his attempt to trap her in a promise to do this more than once.
What are your pronouns?
It was a simple question, but she wanted to see just how he would answer. If the fae opted to give a short answer, or an answer that would only lead to more questions to try and tempt her back for future deals, then she would have to swallow her disappointment and go back to a boring life back home. It blinked at her, before laughing lightly. The air around him seemed to shimmer as his mood lightened noticeably.
I don't have much of a preference,
it said, shaking his head.
Humans like to fixate on gender a lot more than my kind does. Usually, I hear he, him, they, them, or the occasional it, its. Once I was called she, her, but I think that man just really didn't want to accept the fact that he found a man attractive. Take your pick.
She mulled this over. It hadn't evaded the question in the slightest. It had gone into it at much more length than might have been expected, and wasn't trying to entice her into asking another question. She hummed thoughtfully. On that same vein, of ways to address you, may I know what to call you? Because calling you the Fae in my head doesn't seem all that polite, and I technically know two fae. She waited for the being to tell her she would have to come back tomorrow, but to her surprise, it shrugged and answered her without contest.
I've taken a liking to being called Bee recently.
Nice to meet you, Bee. I go by Babs. I look forward to our partnership.
Me too. See you tomorrow.
See you then, she agreed easily. it became a thing. In the dead of night, she would escape with whatever food she could find. On the first day, she had gathered a particularly large offering of bread and jam to make sure it would keep asking her for help. But most of the time, she would come bearing a couple of sandwiches or apples. In return, she got to learn everything she had ever questioned. She learned that Fae was just a general classification for a bunch of different types of magical creatures, that those creatures were all split into three different sub-realms, that he was the ruler of one of those realms, the Night, which housed other creatures like him. There were people more commonly known as hybrids were to be found, where animal features were expected, and where behaviors were always somewhat off because of it. A place of total darkness save for the magic that hung in the air, ready to cling to anything that would take it. That would be trapped in jars like fireflies, only for other jars to burst within the day. They were the most open about what they were, for this was where the creatures danced on the edge of animal and not. Their inhuman traits were on display, and when given proper reason, they were the first to go for throat of those they didn't like. These were the ones that she had always been told of, who wiped out villages before they could even dream of apologizing for their transgressions. It told her of the creatures that she had seen first, the Fae of the In-Between, where the dawn and dusk resided. Orange and purple clouds danced around each other, twirling around and painting the sky. The realm was as perfect as it was deadly. Their lands were often found crackling with energy, ready to sweep up the unwary and send them up into the clouds that had been so gorgeous right up until the reeling back, and churning in preparation to crush you into nothing. The fate that came from there were hardened accordingly. She had been warned that, though the one she had met, who he would only ever call A, was kind and had left long before even B could recall being alive. These were the most dangerous, not because they were particularly evil, for all Fae could be considered that by a mortal standard. But because it was so easy for people to fall for their traps. They looked like humans, and it was natural for humans to give their names to other humans. And then there were the creatures of the day. Sprites, as humans often called them. Tiny and quaint, hardly ever reaching the size of even little 9-year-old buffs, known for the faint shimmer they gave off, the sun that beamed down on them, their houses made out of mushrooms, and the plants that always seemed to flourish under their care. But this was all appearances, and that was where the Fae always seemed to excel. They were the ones known for tricking humans into believing they were guardian angels to use them for their own goals, the ones that would give directions that only led you further into the woods. She learned that time moved differently there, that only a few hours would pass between visits for B, that part of their supposed immortality was due to the fact that their realm's time passed by so much slower than her own. Sure, they all had longer lifespans than humans, but the difference wasn't nearly as drastic as humans were led to believe. Perhaps, most interestingly, she learned that humans could become Fae. All it would take was eating their food, and they would find themselves transforming, slowly but surely, into something other. They would be weaker than the average Fae, and would be given items to connect them to the human world, instead of the mushroom rings that the Fae were known for. But otherwise, they were fundamentally the same. She would deny, until the end of her days, that her eyes strayed to the pomegranate tree, bearing gorgeous fruits on the edge of the clearing, rather often after that night. One day, B told her that she would no longer need to bring food. The cat finally accepted Faye's food. She ignored the lingering jealousy that shouldn't have been there. The boy had been stolen away, after all, and instead asked about her end of the deal. She had long since run out of questions, but that didn't stop her from wanting to know more. She could listen to the stories the Fae could paint of its own world forever, and yet it was never enough, because she would never see the world it described with her own eyes, because she would never leave the clearing without a sense of longing. And perhaps she thought of the Fae as a friend. Maybe she liked it when it would sit her down at the edge of its circle and braid her hair, or when they would play chess, though she never won, something it attributed to age, among its promises that one day it was sure she would get one on over him. Or when it would ask her about how her day had gone. She didn't want to lose him. So she kept coming back, and it kept telling her every story it knew, and there were a lot of them. She had a strong suspicion that being the ruler of the night gave B a few perks, and showing her little bits of magic. And unbeknownst to her, she kept racking up debt. The Fae had never told her that anything that came after their original trades were free. But why would she ever think that her growing obsession with the Fae was anything but natural? It had always been there. She had always wanted to know more. The fingers in her hair, twining careful braids and adding delicate flowers, never did anything more than augment what was already there. She didn't notice her parents frowning at the grass stains on her night dresses. Her mother, counting the food she prepared before sending it off with brows furrowed in concentration. The way her father grimaced when looking at the basket that was missing its smallest loaf. No, she didn't notice until her parents offered her a piece of jewelry. A bracelet made of iron. Yet, it was her neck that felt constricted as she took it in careful hands. The leash that had been leading her into the forest since the first day like an obedient dog pulled tight now that she was no longer able to follow along, and she couldn't seem to get a breath in, for her parents knew, as much as they claimed that everyone was getting new iron jewelry, she wasn't dumb. She knew her parents. Now that she was looking, she recognized the expression playing across their faces. They were scared for her, and perhaps of her. But she slipped it on without complaints and headed up to bed early. Within minutes, she was out of the window. The sun was still sinking in the horizon when she rushed into the woods. Tiny feet picked along the path that had become so familiar to them over the past few months. Shouts echoed behind her as the townsfolk realized she was gone and began to stream into the forest after her. They had already had one child taken this year. They didn't want to lose another. They didn't know that she had been lost for almost as long as Dick had been. She threw the bracelet off, not even glancing back at Yeet as the ground swallowed the offensive metal hole, too concentrated on rushing her way through the brush. The Fae was already there when she reached the clearing, but it wasn't greeting her with its usual smile. It took in her harried expression and frowned.
"What's wrong?"
it asked, his hands coming to rest on her shoulders. She almost broke down crying in relief, and leaned heavily into the man's hold. She couldn't start sobbing quite yet, though. She still had to explain. "They know about you," she said, her head jerking to look as a shout met her ears. It was still far away. The woods were fighting back like they had on the first day she had ventured in, trying to slow whatever progress that wasn't hers. And the night was creeping in, making it even harder for the townsfolk to see the path working to evade them. But it wouldn't stop them for long. They want me to stop seeing you.
There is only one way. They won't be able to take you back.
It hissed, and the hands on her shoulders were digging in, sharp claws digging into her skin and making blood bloom through the fabric of her nightgown. And she remembered the words she had been told her entire life.
Do not eat their food, for you will never be able to come back.
Her hands were shoveling pomegranate into her mouth, almost before she had finished coming up with the idea. Juices spilled down her chin, but she didn't care as she tore into it. Her head began to feel light, and her eyes wanted to drift closed, and all she could think about was how she needed to finish this fruit. But she swayed and fell into Bee's arms, and the townsfolk stepped into the clearing to find the Fae holding another of their children. Her head came to rest against his shoulder, her eyes glazing over. The rocks cast too little light, making the red juices dripping from her mouth look horrifyingly like blood. The pomegranate slipped from limp fingers. He grinned victoriously at them as they disappeared. The fruit fell to the grass with a dull thud. The end.
Author notes bonus. Bruce. Oh no, Alfred is gonna kill me when he finds out I've already gotten another one.
Dick.
You're in it now.
Alfred, appearing in an alcove.
Oh, good, you adopted the cute one I met earlier too.
Points at Jason. You're next. Reader's notes. Thank you for listening. This has been fun. I recorded the first part for Potawin last year. I hope you go listen to that. I hope you listen to that also. And I'll try to get more of the series soon. But also, the next part, Jason's part, is 11k, I think. And that's just way too long for my usual comfort reading length. So, yeah. Anyway, I'll try to get the next part. Run away. Run fair, far away. Run very far away. Soon, but that's 11k words, and I'm a relatively slow potficker, so yeah. After that, we've got Cass, who has just 2k words, and that's gonna be easy. Maybe I'll do that first. And then Tim gets 15k. But anyway, I hope you've enjoyed, thank you for listening, and please remember to drink some water today.